So there is a connection, and I also believe is that because water is a much thicker medium than air, that emotion and feelings are carried with it, all right? So you get pleasure out of it, your senses feel, when I dive with some people, just by being around them, I can tell you how they're feeling. Not necessarily what they're thinking about, because that's impossible, but how their breath hold is going. Are they uncomfortable? Now, you can do that by looking at them, but without even looking at them, tell me how I know.
Hey, folks, we're about to kick off with this week's podcast. Before we kick it off, here's a nice little philosophy moment with my pal, Andre King Comedy. Enjoy.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi life.
When all is said and done, more is said than done. Be someone who does rather than someone who says.
Hey friends, okay, here we go. Just a little bit of an announcement. So we've got a really good couple weeks of podcasting lined up for you guys. A bit of variation, a bit of mind-pondering moments, a bit of expanding our brains. Well, maybe that's how it feels like for me. So awesome stuff. I really want to get straight into it. This week's guest, John Wright, he's the godfather of freediving. What is freediving? It's basically these people who, it's pretty self-explanatory. They dive in the water. But what does that mean for them? What are they searching for? What are they looking for? Maybe they didn't even know that until they started, going down and going into these depths. A little bit what we do on the podcast, we dive into the brain and have a little look around. So I guess we're freediving as well in a weird, strange will metaphor way. Hey, I'll just want to promo next week's episode with a great guest we've got. Slavko is his name, and he made a film called Propaganda. So it's free on YouTube. Search Propaganda on YouTube. Maybe keyword Slavko, S-L-A-V-K-O, I believe his name is. And watch that film, because next week he dives in with a nice long episode about how he made that film, what he's got coming up, the craziness of, CIA, FBI, this whole world of propaganda. It's a great episode. Here's a small little clip from Slavko.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi life.
One day, this person that Mike, who's my co-producer and editor, his phone goes. His wife brings the phone into him. It's bath time with his kids and stuff, whatever. And it's this guy. Now, we had zero digital footprint, especially Mike had nothing to do with anything. He's completely invisible. I had an invisible digital footprint. I mean, people had tried. There's just no getting through. We'd blocked ourselves, tracked the works. He gets a phone call in his house from this guy, and like, Mike's freaked, and so we carefully write something in the forum, where the film was or something.
Was he American dude?
Yeah. And we wrote something to the effect of, we're very careful about it, how this person, because it'd become very familiar, people were attacking all over constantly, this stuff going back and forth through people, how this person had crossed the line and made a phone call at the personal house of one of my crew, and raised the questions, how did this person know how to do this, this is not normal, blah, blah, blah. I think 24, 48 hours later, Anonymous came up and said they'd located the exact address of that person and the issue had been taken care of. We do not forget. We do not, this thing, whatever. Gone, person gone.
Okay, friends, so that's Slavko. That's out next week. But this week, we're here with the godfather of freediving, John Wright. Enjoy this week's episode, mykiwilife.com. Thank you to everyone involved. Hugs to everyone.
My Kiwi Life, let's play the game of life today. My Kiwi life, the ups and downs we live each day. This is my Kiwi life. Oh, this is my Kiwi life.
you are the guy responsible for bringing free diving to New Zealand. Am I wrong there?
No. What happened is that I owned a scuba diving shop for 27 years, and I got just sick of every time we did something different, we added more gear, and I did the big shark chasing, and I did wreck diving all over the Pacific, and I was pretty lucky, but I got sick of it. And there was a lady called Tanya Streeter coming, who was the world champion, and she was coming to do a documentary here filmed in New Zealand, and I contacted her, and the rest is probably history, as you would say. So she taught me to freedive way back in 2000.
Were you natural at it?
I sink pretty well because of the size.
Well, you're a front row forward.
I'm a front row forward.
If we go back, you were a league player before, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
For the Kiwis.
Yes. Played for New Zealand. Lucky to wear the New Zealand jersey, so that's a very proud thing as well. So, but freediving for me was the change from the physical to the mental side, and I basically had given football up for scuba diving, which was my passion, and then I got out of the scuba shop and got into freediving, and it's taken me all over the world. There's places I would never go, you know, from Vancouver to – I was in Belgrade last year. I was in Cagliari in Italy the year before. This year I'm hoping to go to Finland and Greece.
Is it a well-funded sport?
Hell no.
Is it out of your own pocket?
Being an international judge as well, if you get selected, you get – you know, they pay for you to go and you get your digs. But to get to that level, it's cost me quite a bit. But my wife says there's no such thing as free diving. It costs us money. But I like the whole scene. It's just a nice, friendly group of people.
And that's the truth there, because when I went on the Facebook page, first of all, there's videos of people like swimming laps. That's how you must train in the pool, right? Underwater, laps and laps and laps. And it looks hard. I'll go into a story how I came across you soon. But the other pictures of people coming out smiling, there's something that the water is offering them. I mean, it's a weird thing, right? You're thinking about people swimming underwater. You're by yourself. It feels like you could drown. I mean, that's how the outside is looking.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we just discussed the outside. I think the biggest thing that you get is, first of all, it's only you. It's solo. It's what you do yourself, and it's emotional. If you've had a crap day at work, it can turn into a good day in the water. Or it could turn into a really bad day in the water. So demons that are on the surface can multiply drastically. And at that time, you've got to have either a good coach or have the decision-making process to say, it's a bad day, we'll change what we're doing. All right? It's a very emotional thing, very, very emotional. Wow.
See, you don't think about stuff like that, eh? So you would say that a free diver just wouldn't let themselves dive if they were stressed or if you had a really bad, say, drive to the ocean or the pool, it wouldn't be a good idea just to whip in and go down?
Look, people talk about doing things, and I said to you the thing that I struggle most with is the mental side, and it's always been my weakness. I'm a front row forward. I used to solve problems by punching people.
Yeah.
All right, now when I do this for myself and I've gone back to competing, it's about solving the problem, making sure that the decision I make to do what I do is having fun. And sometimes you put numbers in the road. I mean, I'm training for a personal best this year in Bali. And ultimately, that'll be an 8-month program. And it's not just going to happen overnight.
Yeah. Sorry, can I quickly ask a question? This is Bundy speaking. Will hasn't introduced me, but I'm sitting
in. I'll do it in the intro.
Oh, okay.
It's
sorry,
a slick podcast. You're just here sharp for jokes, all right?
I am, but I do have a legitimate question about free diving.
Yep.
Like, to your ignorant outsider, they might just think, well, what's so difficult about holding your breath and diving deeper? Because we've all held our breath and dove down, obviously not very far. Yep. But what sort of skills do you have to bring to it? Okay. What do you need?
Well, first of all, the funny thing is when I say freediving to most people, I think I jump off cliffs. Okay? So there is an ignorance to that. And the other thing being is everybody sometime in their childhood has had a competition who can hold their breath the longest under the water. If you go back far enough, freediving goes back to the Romans. They had divers during that time. And it's generally about food, warfare, or money. And in those days, it was coral, seafood, fishing, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. So freediving in its truest form, we do it in either pools or the ocean or lakes. There is 6 examinable disciplines. There are a lot more than that, but we only examine 6 of those. But the word free diving simply means that you take a breath. For instance, in the pool, there are 3 disciplines. One is how long you can hold your breath, right? Just lying stationary in the water. And to give you an example, the men's world record, I think, is about 11 minutes, and the woman is 9:30.
Wow.
And even it's old
approximately
people,
9 minutes longer than my my record.
Yeah, my best is 5:30.
So are you getting into a state of mind before you, like, for example, if we put the clock on now?
Yeah, well, it wouldn't happen.
Is it? Yeah.
It's just you have to work on getting your heart rate down, and it's a matter of spending time. You'll find most people switch off, start a breathing system where inhalation is 5 seconds, exhalation is 10 seconds. So the inhale is shorter by half or by 3 times. So you exhale, but it's really slow. So it's quite a slow thing. And you're just getting your body slowly to bring your heart rate down.
Wow. I feel like
People like Will Troubridge, for instance, that their heart rate, resting heart rate, will be really low anyway. But during a dive, it might get down to about 18 beats a minute, which most medical practitioners would say you're dead.
Wow.
So it's about getting that heart rate down and keeping it there, because as soon as it goes up, it creates a panic and it just changes things.
So high blood pressure people like me probably aren't good free divers.
It would probably be actually good for you to do in the fitness side of it. I also teach a program which is based around underwater sports, which is just a fitness base. In fact, I was talking to Ruben Wicki the other day, who's at Warriors, who I know quite well, and I said, if you want me to torture them, I'm quite happy to do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so we train either hypoxically, which is high levels of CO2, or O2, so one is very short intervals. So like I was telling you this morning, we do 25 meters underwater, one breath, 25 meters underwater, one breath, do that 6 times, have a 2-minute rest and do it again. All right, and by the time you've done 40 minutes of that, your muscles are full of CO2, Just like swimmers, okay? Whereas the other way around, we'd be doing longer distances, so you're lower levels of oxygen. So that's how we train, either high levels of CO2 or low levels of oxygen.
Do you think
– does that answer your question?
It does answer my question, but I've got one more question.
Certainly.
Because when I think of free diving, I think of, like – is it the movie The Big Blue?
Big Blue.
And so when I think of free diving, all I think of is the one discipline.
Yeah, that's called No Limits.
No Limits.
And I personally detest it. I think it's a magical act. It's killed three or four of our top free divers in the world. And it's not an exam under the discipline I judge under. We don't accept it as a discipline anymore.
Really?
People are having major problems. I won't go into those, but it is out and out dangerous.
Dangerous.
So extreme. For people like me who maybe aren't across the films like you, Bundy, just explain what you guys are talking about.
Basically, it sounds –
It's not a machine, okay? What you do is you take a breath, you stand in a machine, pull a lever, and it takes you down to the bottom. When you get to the bottom, you fill a bag full of air, and it rockets you back to the surface. So there's no physical effort by the athlete. Okay, now, the point being is I forget what the record is now, but people are going so deep, they're actually getting the bends really badly. Okay, they're falling off. One of the ladies drowned after 9 minutes underwater. It isn't something, you know, let's not talk about something that I really don't like, because to me it's derogatory. The movie The Big Blue was about 2 protagonists who – One, Jacques Mayol, and the other Enzo Mallorca, and they both come from different camps. One was a yogi and the other was a physical person like myself, big person. And I followed, when I first started freediving, the physical person, yet the person that does the yoga and stretching and relaxation proves to be the method we now use today.
Sure.
So one ran out of, we can't just keep going, being stronger, more physically demanding, the best way is more relaxing, etc.
So that the guy that did that Steinlager diving straight down, is that's free diving?
That's correct. Yeah, that's what.
So you have to go down 2 meters until pressure starts giving in?
His name is William Troubridge. He is a New Zealander, lives in the Bahamas at a place called Dean's Blue Hole. William is the top free diver in his discipline, which is constant weight, no fins. Now, constant weight, no fins means whatever you take underwater – you bring back. So if you wear a weight belt, you must bring the same weight back with you. But he does it without fins. So basically like swimming down breaststroke. So he'll swim down, and I think his world record that he's trying to break, and he's actually trying to break it in 2 weeks' time again. And he will swim. He wants to do 104 meters. The dive will take 4 minutes.
Wow.
So he will swim down. Now, the difficult part of the dive for him will be, because what they do is they start swimming, then you get to a negative buoyancy. Now, this is what most people don't understand is, for me, I start falling at about 18 meters. It's like falling out of a plane, and you actually just fall. So he'll fall from 16, 80 meters to 104 meters, won't move. Then the hard bit is to actually overcome the negative pull of gravity, obviously, and the water pressure is compressed his wetsuit. So then he has to swim against all of that negativity till he gets positively buoyant again, which for him would probably be about 18, 20 meters. So, yeah, he's a phenomenal athlete.
Well, it's interesting too, because aren't there rules like you have to come up, then you have to be able to say something back to the judges? And the judges would be you, wouldn't it? So what are you looking for when a dude or female comes up?
Firstly, when we first started judging these efforts, we would judge on colour. So people would wear makeup, okay?
Really?
We would judge on head movement like this or anything. Anything out of the ordinary, people would be disqualified, right? So then we come up with a procedure that was visual, a mechanical movement, and a verbal movement. So we could actually check cognizance of the diver. So they must come up to the surface, okay, and remove their facial equipment. Now, William dives with a pair of fluid goggles, which is actually like swim goggles full of water, with lenses on the outside to correct the refraction of the water. So if you're a photographer, so he's actually wearing corrective lenses, he must remove his facial equipment, which will include a nose clip. So the first thing he does, off with the goggles, off with the nose clip. That's step one. Step two is to make a visual signal, so a mechanical signal, which is an okay signal, which is the thumb and one of the fingers joined in a circle. All right, so it must be basically like that. And then he must say it, and it has to be in English, can't be in French, even if you're Russian, French, whatever, it has to be, I am okay. All that has to be completed from the time he takes the breath at the surface within 15 seconds, not 15.1.
Wow.
If he doesn't complete that, disqualification.
I think that should be a rule in general life. Come home from work, you should have to do those things too, you know?
No,
I'm going to go home tonight to Moni, and I'm going to give the visual reference. I am okay.
Because, well, you'd be quite surprised. People go, I'm okay.
Well, and then I did.
They do that as well when they come home after a late night out. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, there's that thing too. Didn't he break his previous record? We're talking William.
Yes, he
did. But he got it around the wrong way.
No, what happened with William is he signaled his safety divers. He knew at about 20 meters that he was in trouble. So he actually touched, because he can't touch the rope from 100 meters up. He can't touch anything. He must swim. All right. So he knew that he wasn't going to make it to the surface, so he had assistance. So the two safety divers, one, a guy called Moss Burmester, who was a New Zealand Olympic swimmer.
Yes.
Okay. And the other guy is a guy called Jono Sunnex. Now, Jono's one of the four Kiwis that are 100 meter divers. So he was in charge of the safety team. So a lot of Kiwis at that particular event.
What's the sign that you're in trouble? Is it just a mental thing? You just know it?
I think, to be fair to William on that, is I think that the training hadn't been going as well. He would have known. He had not done that dive often enough, or close to that dive often enough. I think he knew in his own mind. Let's be honest. It's like driving a car down the motorway at 200 Ks and the brakes aren't good, okay? There is no room for error. That dive could have been the next day and he could have been perfect with it, okay? It's that on edge. You hold your breath for 4 minutes and swim, you are pretty low on everything by the time you get. So mental strength, William has plenty of it. Breath holding ability, he has plenty of it. Flexibility, which is a very big thing in deep diving, because the ability to make sure that you can control your diaphragm. But it was just too much for him on the day. I think he'll do it. Nobody else has got anywhere near it, you realize. So he's well out there.
John, you know how you're talking about specific breathing methods to... You're oxygenating your blood, are you? I'm not a scientist, so I'm just trying to break it down.
No science.
Thickhead
the
terms.
Word oxygenate your blood is actually wrong, okay? The biggest thing with this is that hyperventilation, which is rapid breathing, like it doesn't give you any more oxygen. It actually reduces the CO2. Now, when you're sitting there or when you're asleep, the CO2 builds up in your system, sends a message to your brain, that sends a message to your diaphragm moves and you breathe, okay? So you don't ever put any more oxygen in the system. You can do whatever you like. By the type of breathing we use, I won't share here, we use diaphragmatic breathing, which is if you look at a baby, the first breath they take is from the tummy. So when we breathe from the tummy to the ribs, to the thorax, and right up. So for me, a breath starts in my belly button and then works up to my ribs.
Can you show us? I mean, it doesn't matter on people at home when they're walking, they all want right. part of this because there's
all right.
we've forgotten how to breathe.
A breath starts with an exhale.
Wow. And observing, there's something else going on, right, Craw? A connection. Bundy, you're looking nervous.
That was one breath?
One breath.
Wow.
How long would you sort of like continue that pattern?
Oh, well, it depends what I'm doing. That's actually what we call diaphragmatic breathing, which is what we do before we do some deep dives because we have problems with squeezes where the lungs actually squeeze together.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so it's a matter of working on your diaphragm. So we do a lot of stretching and we do full lung stretches, or we do what we call empty stretches, which are not recommended to anybody. Okay, it's something that if it's hurting, then you shouldn't be, the word stretch means stretch. It doesn't mean tear. Okay, because breath. We train a lot with that, but the main thing is that you can't do that in the water. So before William dives, he will have done all of that preparation. He would do all the stretching. It'll be an hour routine. He dives what we call no warm up dives, which basically he gets in the water, takes a breath, does his preparation and dives. I find that really difficult. So for me, if I want to do a 40, 45 meter dive, I'll do a 15 meter dive really slowly for maybe minute 30. Then I go and do a 25 meter dive. So in other words, my body, and I find my third dive is always my premium dive. So tomorrow night at the lake, I want to do a 35. So I'll do a 15, a 25, a 35. And then I won't go any deeper. I'll come back. So I'll work my way back up the way.
And what do people feel the first time they dive? If it's in the pool, if it's in the lake, I'm imagining, and I'd like to maybe come and try one time with you.
We'd love to have you along.
There must be a feeling of, I don't really know how to describe it, like almost like, wow, I can't believe I can do that.
My job as a teacher or somebody that wants you to enjoy yourself, the first thing I've got to do is get you. I will tell everybody that a 3-minute breath hold when I first started I thought was extreme. I would say to you, if you want to, within a couple of months you could do 3 minutes. We regularly have over 2/3 of our classes do over 3 minutes on their first class.
Wow.
But it's a mental state. You have to want to do it. People talk about physical fitness, age, et cetera, et cetera. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got about how you can actually control yourself.
See, there's the key, eh? But it's that controlling.
But you've got to understand people, because we find people come along to a class and they might do a 4-minute dive. So then they come along for the next 5 months and they go backwards because they start thinking about what they've done. All right. So, and the numbers become rather than the actual how the body's feeling. Right. I mean, I got stumped for a long period of time in a particular thing. So, it's really important that you just take it slow and steady. And most of all, it should be having fun. Like I was telling you this morning about what we were doing and, everybody's really hurting, but we've stopped. Sit in a spa pool afterwards, discuss it. We see the reason for why, and there's a purpose to it.
Yeah.
Do you sit in? Is this like sitting in the spa pool? Is that a part of the whole physical thing, or are you just like relaxing in a spa pool?
You get up at quarter to five in the morning to go and get in the outside pool. Gotcha. It's actually just a nice warm up. Look, freediving is. I've travelled the world. I did my first world championships as competitor, manager, coach in 2004 in Canada. And I've gone on this. I've done 6 world championships in different varieties of roles. And I've never heard another competitor bitch or moan or argue with anybody else. It's always, they know what's happening. And they're always there to shake your hand. And so it's not like, when you play footy, I mean, it's different. It's not confrontational. It's certainly confrontational. People want to do the best. And there is disappointment. There is no two ways about it. The occasional, and you'll see the athlete. And then, like my first day in Belgrade, we're dealing with top athletes. And we're running 8 lanes at a time. So you've got 8 starters. Everybody starts at exactly the same time, right? And out of the 8 athletes on the very first heat, 5 of them came to the surface and bang, fell over.
Wow. So,
all right. But because they're pushing themselves, we've got things in place. That's a good time to happen. But if you turned out like that every day, so as that competition were on, this is the World Champs in Belgrade last year. The competitors push less and less, yet their results were better because they start realizing that the hype got them, and they just take their time. So yeah. It's a personal thing.
Well, it's interesting you're talking about footy as well, because the whole point to before you go and play is to get yourself pumped,
oh, yeah.
is to really ready to rock. And it seems to me that before you're ready to dive, it's not the same, is it? It's about relaxing yourself. It's about not panicking, almost the opposite.
Singular focus.
Yeah, well, I think the thing here is that something I've always struggled with, and I'm still struggling with it, and it took I had a young lady over recently, who a French tourist, who I love the way the French dive and I love the way the Italians dive, because it's all emotional. They'll tell you, we dive in the here, okay? Whereas Kiwis are a little bit different. We tend to be a bit more methodical, but they dive with emotion. And she said to me, John, you look like you're going to fucking die. Because I was like this before I dived. And she says, just relax your face and just taking the calmer. And I remember those words every time before I dive.
Wow.
Something that made a difference to me, yet nobody else, because I end up coaching most people, could actually tell me that they couldn't see, you know. And now my beginning of my dive is so much slower. And in my own mind, you know, I'm still learning to visualize things, because that's something else that I can't do.
But, you know, you take the pool away and it feels like that's another good bit of advice. You know, someone's sitting there at work. I'd love to say, Crawford, you look like you're going to f***ing die. You know, and that might, he might just say, oh, next time I sit down to my computer, don't look like I'm going to die.
Well, what are the physical and mental benefits of freediving? Because you know.
Well, I'll give you an example.
You love
I mean,
it.
I had quite a few years out of it, okay? Having played football, finishing in 78, had the dive shop, got into this. There was no New Zealand records when I started, so I set all the New Zealand records myself. I was 51 years of age then, okay? I had what I would classify as a few sedentary years where my wife supported me. We lived overseas. She's a high-powered executive. I was the tour guide, and I put on I ballooned out to 163 kilos.
It's a big man, John.
Okay, it is a big
it's
man.
Nearly as big as Willie.
Yeah, and I come back, and I've got down to 111. I've just put some on over summer. So my goal weight's 108, okay? So what freediving does for me, it gives me a goal to use, and I can train. I've got bad knees. All right. So for me, the water is the ideal place to do. And I actually enjoy it. But the health benefits, obviously you get fitter. You learn to control yourself more. There is risk of all sorts of things in the water. I don't know how I can answer your question to say what other benefits there are. I think the biggest benefit for me is that I enjoy it. And therefore, other than my wife, and if she's going to listen to this, she goes, you know, are we going out or are you going freediving?
Yeah.
because
I have the same conversation with podcasting.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit like that. My wife's a scuba instructor. But she, you know, we've got a great marriage. And the idea being is that she understands how much passion I have for it. And I get as much out of teaching people and seeing them achieve. I've coached world champions, you know, and New Zealanders, I think, in total, we will probably only have about 40 competitive divers max. And yet at any one stage, between the New Zealanders and the Russians, we've held all the world records, all right? So as a nation, once again, we punch above our weight. Why do we do so? I put it back to the way we train. I use the Arthur Lydiard type approach where more is better, all right? You know, to run 100 metres, you've got to run a marathon first type of thing. And that's the way we train. And I think that's, you know, we're very lucky.
Well, that breathing you did before, there seemed like there was some form of peace, some spiritual aspect to it. Maybe spiritual is a bit extreme.
No.
Meditative.
Yeah, totally. If you do it for long enough, you go to sleep.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Really?
Well, that's got to have benefits.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, except on a Friday night, which is the only night I do. No, I think I was saying, look, freediving tends to attract a wide range of people. You certainly get people, and I'm not knocking any range of people. You get people that are right into yoga because it is that type of thing. You get people that are into different types of foods, vegans, you know, because we're now proving that food and freediving, for instance, before I dive, I won't eat for 4 hours, nothing, only water. Otherwise, your stomach gets compressed. And if you're actually digesting food, you're using energy to digest food. So, you know, and those sorts of things. So you will get a wide range of people, different types of foods. Now, I was telling Will that a lot of the athletes now are using condensed beetroot juice, okay? So it's a liter and a half of beetroot condensed into 100 mils. I use it before competitions. Now, whether it has a placebo effect or not, it does uplift more oxygen. It's been proven. A lot of cyclists use it, by the way. All right. So my kids think I'm crazy because I get this beetroot juice delivered. But we are, it has dietary things that are going to make a difference. So we're learning. I think freediving is teaching other athletes a little bit, and we're learning from other athletes as well that what you do, what you consume is as important as other things.
What's interesting too with food and diet, so we had a professor on, Grant Schofield, and he wrote this book on fat.
Yep.
He said high fat, low carb is the way. Yep. What about that? Do you guys like, are you on board with that? I mean, I guess from a footy player, coaches always said too much fat, right? Get on.
Well, I've got a problem. I see food, need it.
Yeah, yeah. But this is the thing. Grant was saying you're supposed to eat fat. Our bodies are built to eat fat. It's the sugar. It's the carbohydrates. So cut them out, up the veggies, up the meat. Not meat, up the fat, and then you're going to see health benefits.
I have been a believer. Train hard, watch what you eat. And my particular problem is high sugar intake. I like a particular type of bourbon, right? All right. So for me, in a training regime, I might reward myself once a month with that particular type of bourbon. So I've got to be very careful here because people are going to say, you know, I'm not a nutritionist.
No, no, no.
For me, the way to achievement is watching what I eat, particularly during the day, snack foods, etc. I work outside, so, you know, have a good breakfast. And I'm onto things like whole grain, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
But no, you don't have to be careful. I'll tell you why, because this is just a conversation with people.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Where people try and put you in a box, they say, he admits to that. But when in real life, people don't talk like that.
No, I don't. There's certain things, as I said to you, I ain't going to mention. I don't really care because people know that I speak my mind anyway. Whether it's right or wrong, that's what it is. It's, you know, they call me the godfather of freediving, right? Because, you know, I'm the oldest by a long shot, you know, and I've gone back to competing. And last year, the funny part about it, in the first competition I ever did, I got disqualified on the first dive. I got disqualified on the second dive and penalized on the third. So I didn't have a clean dive. And these are by people I taught to judge, right? But because I was thinking like an athlete, like a judge, not an athlete, all right, I made mistakes, you know, and I was quite angry about all that, not because of people, what they did to me, but because I was embarrassed by it, you know. So, it's just a wonderful sport. I mean, we find all walks of life. We've got people that are psychologists right down to people that just come along to get away from the kids running around the house, you know, and their peace is being underwater. There's a lady out there called Dr. Sylvia Earle, who was one of the first female divers, and they did years ago in the late 70s experience with people living underwater, and she was the first female to do 5 days underwater in this habitat, the whole nine yards. And she wrote a book to say to get away from her kids, she'd fill the bath up with water, put the snorkel and line the bath with no noise. Now, that's the way it relates. It's just, you know, I mean.
Can I say two things?
Yes.
You love the nickname Don. Sorry, you love the nickname The Godfather. I was calling you Don, the Don in my head.
I called this episode the Don of Freediving. Now I'm going to change it to The Godfather of Freediving.
That's good. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we're going to try and guess what your bourbon is that you like. I'm going with Maker's Mark, boys. You got anything else?
You might be a Jim Beam man. Oh, wait, is it Cougar, is it? That's the Aussie one.
No. This is an American one. It has a few different brands. It comes with a honey type as well.
Bundy, come on, quiz background.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Isn't it?
Jack Daniels?
Nope. Wild Turkey.
Oh.
And I'm afraid I left. I've actually stopped buying it now. I just buy it in premix. But
we can't let it go. How does the person live under the water?
It was called Tech Tide or Tech Light. It was an experiment in the ability of the human body. This is long before they got into space, right? So the body to live in a virtual weightless environment. So what they did, they actually created underwater farms, and he lived in this big shell with bunks in it, and they pumped the air down through it, and they lived there for a week at a time. And it was, you know, and they would spend the whole time. So that's you know.
Because I'm thinking like the Little Mermaid.
Under the sea.
Under the sea with the song.
Well, we're creating stuff. Little mermaids. I mean, some of the, you know, just telling Will this morning, we had a young girl that's at 16, you know, and loves freediving and just started to take it up. She's a really different sort of character, very strong, jumps on a bike at 4:45 in the morning, rides 5Ks to come to the pool. I put her through a fairly hard routine. She jumps back in a bike, rides back home, and goes to school. So why do people do that? You know, it's got to be some pleasure in it, you know.
John, you know, when we can all remember as kids trying to get the other side of the pool, and there's those last few breaths, which I remember started making these sounds.
It's called contractions, yep.
Is that the brain telling me, get up? But what I want to ask is there more? Can I do more? Is it a sense of mind?
Okay, you can do probably three times more than you think you can.
Wow.
Okay, that all that is your brain saying CO2 levels high. Okay, now what most people tend to start doing then is start swimming faster, which creates more CO2, which uses a high level of oxygen, which creates more stress. Okay, so start swimming slower, and then make the contractions. I try and make the contractions move. So in other words, I take them from my throat, put them on my diaphragm because I've got more control and more muscles. If you watch, if you actually watch William Troubridge jump close underwater from about most of the way back, he'll be having contractions all the way.
Wow. That's amazing, eh? You know, I just can't help but think you remove the pool and the same conversation we're having, we're actually talking about real things, you know, things that kind of connect us. Croy, have you got internet on there?
Yeah.
Can you just search up, it just came to my head, the ape water theory. Now, there's this thing that I was looking, researching, well, not really because I don't research, but it's this idea that humans are connected to the water. If you chuck a chimp in the water, anything similar to us, they'll sink, but we swim. And I was trying to work out why.
Well, you're carried in water for 9 months, okay? So if you take a baby, in fact, babies are born in water now sometimes, okay, in water birth. If you take a baby and leave the cord attached, the baby won't swallow water, okay, because they've been in water for 9 months.
Hmm.
Now, they lose it very quickly. So if you introduce – I'm not saying you put the child back in and drown them or anything like that, but if you reintroduce them to it, the reflex is still there. And part of that is the diaphragmatic breathing, okay, which is the key to freediving. So it's the – if you watch a baby, they breathe from their tummy. They don't breathe from the top of their chest. So they already diaphragmatic breathe. So there is a connection, and I also believe as we discussed before, is that because water is a much thicker medium than air, that emotion and feelings are carried with it, all right? So you get pleasure out of it, your senses feel, when I dive with some people, just by being around them, I can tell you how they're feeling. Not necessarily what they're thinking about, because that's impossible, but how their breath hold is going. Are they uncomfortable? Now, you can do that by looking at them, but without even looking at them, tell me how I know.
See, that's amazing. All right. That's amazing.
So to me, it can be a little disturbing because you can get very close to particular athletes but those sort of things, it's there. It happens.
Well, what it means to me is that there's something we're missing here. If there's this way to connect, then we should be doing more of this. Because people are coming and they're enjoying this free diving, they're getting more than they're probably getting into it for this idea of it's a good way to keep my fitness up or a new challenge, but there's so much more by the sounds of it.
I think once people – I'll give an example, and I use this – I think Scott Rice is his name. He came up with the idea of the Ocean Swim Series. He would be a very interesting man. In the first 4 years, he lost 3 people by drowning. Okay, now they weren't his fault, blah, blah, blah. He's still doing it today. You look at the people that Ocean Swim go, I'm in the Howick area now, and the people that have got wetsuits on, they're not all triathletes. They're people, you know, just going and swimming, and they'll do the Ocean Swim races. And there's a series all the way around New Zealand. I think it's wonderful. So the more exposure we get to people, and people, they don't have to be perfect at it. They just get some enjoyment out of it, even if it's just the camaraderie afterwards. I think that's what makes all of those sorts of things special.
And people will love this, John, because it is growing, but it's not in the main conversation in life. So what I like is when they hear you talk, you're expressing it, you're talking more than just we're swimming down a deep hole. Look, you know, there's more here.
Yesterday, we're at the lake. The lake's been pretty – we train at Lake Pupuki, which is on the shore. For those that don't know, it's 64 metres deep. This year has been really dirty because we've had an influx of – some sort of nutrient that's actually made a lot of the plankton in it die. So we've had a really, you know, there was a couple of young ladies, or two ladies, not young, swimming with me last night. And the first one goes down to 35 metres, you know, comes up, big smile on her face, best dive I've done all year. And, you know, and The next one, who's got a very stressful job, high power job, goes down, comes up with exactly the same opinion. So that was their way of relaxing. Now, if you look at that, it's pitch black, okay? Yes, it's quite warm on the surface. It's about 26 at the moment in the lake. But by the time you get to 20 meters, it's 16, 15 degrees, all right? You're on your own, and it's pitch black. Why do we do it, okay? Why do we smile after doing it? Because you're experimenting, and you are. The biggest thing about it is you are problem solving the whole time. You have to make yourself, you know, and it's just what it is.
Makes
sense. I drive across twice a week. And it's an hour and a half drive from how I can just freaking traffic.
So you must love it.
I live next to Pupuke, actually.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
So you notice this year how it's a coffee colour?
I haven't. I've been away for a few months. So,
oh, nice. Yeah. Where have you been?
Cambodia and Vietnam. Had a good time. I was swimming in pools and I was holding my breath and we were doing lengths underwater.
Good on you. Yeah. Just make sure the only thing I can
say... We were
say,
drunk at the same time. But.
Don't like to hear this.
Sorry about that, John.
No, that's right. Just whatever we say, most important thing is never, ever train on your own. Okay?
Right.
We've got a major problem here with a lot of the pools at the moment trying to stop any type of... like we're going to become like the States where they are petrified because what's happened... since a few incidents, the government's now looking at for instance, the YMCA is managed from Australia. Well, if somebody drowns in a pool here, the general manager of the whole group is responsible, not just the manager of the pool. So they're all going, let's take out anything that might be dangerous and bin it, okay?
So they're trying to regulate it in some sort of sense. Yeah, correct.
Well, just recently, I don't know whether you saw in the newspapers about these kids, they've come up with mermaid tails, these plastic mermaid tails.
Sure.
Right? And so
I want
a lot of people have been buying them for the kids that can't swim. So then they can't stand up. All right? So all of a sudden, that's quite – I mean, the warehouse has sold them. And to me, if the kid can swim and they want to have fun with it, that's and they're under supervision, no problems at all. But we just have to be aware. Anything to do with the water, particularly going underwater – should always be supervised.
Yeah, agreed.
You know,
agreed.
We have strict rules in our club, and it's very important.
Again, another tip. I feel like take the pool away. It's a good tip. Be supervised. Do the right thing. Corey, anything on that ape water theory?
Well, I found something interesting on breathing.
Yeah.
Which was, it says that the human respiratory system, unlike other land mammals, in two respects. The first is that we have conscious control of our breathing, in which most mammals... these actions are involuntary, like the heartbeat or the process of digestion. Voluntary breath control appears to be aquatic adaptation because of, apart from ourselves, the only aquatic mammals like seals and dolphins, when they decide how deep they're going to dive, they can estimate how much air they need to inhale. Without voluntary breath control, it's unlikely that we could have learned to speak.
Wow.
I don't know where the speak thing came from, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
That could be, that we evolved from... we just learned to dive, and there's that woman living in the ocean, the Lake Little Mermaid.
We are, if people don't understand, we are an evolving species, and we are evolving all the time. I mean, when I first started freediving, you know, we thought 3 minutes was a long breath hold. I mean, the world record in those days was 4 minutes something. Then it jumped out. How long can we actually do it for? We're now getting to the stage where we're not increasing it by 10 seconds at a time. It's more like 1 and 2 seconds at a time. So the involvement is slowing up. Training methods have changed. Equipment's changed. Have we reached the end? I don't think so.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it also says we can breathe through our nostrils as well as our mouths, which apparently other mammals can't do or something.
Yeah. Well, the secret to deep dives, the people going beyond 45 or 40 metres, is the ability to be able to equalise your ears. Otherwise, okay, so... we use a method called a mouthful, which is quite complicated, is that we actually bring air back out of our lungs into our mouth, all right, by making a sound, and then our throat involuntarily just stops air going. Now, there's nothing there to stop it, and it actually holds the air in there, and it's called a mouthful. So it takes a little bit of getting used to, but, you know, we actually make a sound like, and we're actually bringing air back out of my lungs.
See, that's the thing is that, and going back to how I found out about you, is I came to the pool and you guys were doing all this stuff. You were sitting there, I was looking at, you know, you in the pool and you're like, and you look really uncomfortable. Oh, yeah. I was like, I have my kids there. They're like, Dad, what's that guy doing? And you were obviously doing something, getting preparing or practicing or training.
It depends what we were doing. I mean, sometimes we dive without any air in our lungs at all. So we actually breathe out, all right, which prepares us for squeezes and prepares us, I mean, we do some crazy things. Like I did a dive the other day, dived down to 10 meters, came back to the surface, didn't take a breath, breathed out, went back to 10 meters and back again. Well, that's not very pleasant.
But what I think is happening is that when I look around, no one's doing that. You guys are all doing that. Then when I see you hop out of the pool, everyone's so happy. There's something else going on here. So what I want to work out is maybe we could do that breathing in regular life and it would just help us out. It would make us do something different.
Look, I think...
It's abdominal breathing is what I talked about, isn't it?
Yeah. To be honest, I don't think it's just the breathing. I think it's the whole psychology of it all. And I think, you know, I'm not a gym junkie. I still go... I do classes. I do spin classes, which are my aerobic training. And I like it because somebody tells me what to do and I do it, right? So I'm a lazy trainer and I'm not into, you know. But I think the thing is, if you go to the gym, we know it releases endorphins. And I don't think freediving as much, you get the same release. I think the health benefits. I mean, people ask me, is it dangerous? Of course it's dangerous. All right, it's, you know, I mean, you're doing something, but we minimize those risks. Like we dive, every time we dive with a lanyard that's attached to a line. On the top of that line, we have what we call, it's a basically a one-way system. So we can actually pull the diver back up, okay? If you're doing a competition, we have a counterbalance. So the diver's on one line, there's a big weight on the other. So if anything happens, we know exactly the time of the dive. We can press a button, the counterbalance goes down, the diver's pulled up. Wow. So we're making it as safe as we can. We had our first ever death in freediving last year, 18 months ago.
Really?
Yeah. I can't pronounce the surname, but an American chap, Nick, unfortunately had what we call a squeeze where both the lung walls touch. And basically what happens is then you can't, A, you can't breathe, and B, it creates a lot of very pink, bright liquid, which is like a froth, okay? And they couldn't revive him. Now, it is the greatest risk of diving at the moment because people are going too fast too soon. So when I started, for instance, the New Zealand record didn't exist and it took me 18 months to go from 40 metres to 52 metres. I know some people now can do that with a mouthful, which is, you know, you can learn about online, and they can do that in 4 months. So the body isn't ready for what they're doing to it. So it's a gradual. See, you know, I mean, that's my belief, is that you take things gradually, work at your speed that your body will allow you to work at, particularly for me, because I'm no spring chicken anymore.
Yeah, but it must be keeping you healthy, you know, like if I relate you to my old man, he's in the 60s, he's, one, he doesn't speak like this, I love him, but he doesn't speak like this, that's what is confusing me about you, because I can relate very well to you, you're like my dad's mates, but there's something different, you've clicked onto something that others haven't, and I'm just trying to work out why that is there something that you worked out from a young age, did you just look at life a bit different?
No, I'm a boy that's born and bred in Mangere, played football for Otahoo, played football for Mangere East Foundation, member of people like Olsen Fonapina. We played football together, went to the same schools. You know, brought up in the idea that you work hard, you get, you know, you make your own life, you don't get given things. I think that's it. Got four children, triplets, 26-year-old triplets and a 28-year-old.
Wow.
Coached the local footy team. You know, everybody calls me Johnny. Okay, around the community. So because I hate Mr. Even my own children call me Johnny, because I hate formality. So, you know, we would be like, when the kids would go out and wouldn't go home, we would encourage them, if you don't want to go home, that's fine. Your parents ring, no problems at all. So that's my philosophy in life, is that, you know, people learn. It's just the way it goes. But, you know, I can't say that I don't enjoy life, because I do. I think freediving is a component of my life that probably consumes me a little too much. My wife would say a lot. But I think that if you're happy in what you're doing, life just is just ball.
Well, it's awesome that you're lucky enough to have found that. You know, I think that's what a lot of listeners are looking for, including me. You know, like, what's going on here? What's my version of freediving? You know, it's
podcasting.
Podcasting, maybe. I'm certainly getting all. I'm getting smarter, I hope. What do you reckon, Bundy? You're a quiz master.
Well, yeah, Willie. I mean, it's obvious that you're getting smarter. You can just tell by that.
Thinner, Bundy? You haven't seen me for a while.
I don't reckon you're thinner, Willie. Okay, I haven't seen you for 2 months. You
know, I might cut this bit.
I don't reckon you're thinner. Well, sorry, buddy.
I've got some good info on the ape. I mean, the water ape.
Yeah.
Humans are by far the fattest primates. We have 10 times as many fat cells in our bodies as we expect to have for an animal our size. Fat is good for insulation in water and for giving buoyancy, which means floating.
So is that harder for me to get down?
Yeah, well, look, and then don't take this the wrong way. You and I float,
Johnny.
You and I float really well. Okay,
the Don.
Yeah, but yes. Well, if you look at the Japanese armor, who were the women that for years dived for food, went back. Right, they would dive rather than the men. And they had a special position. Okay, and it was because they had a slightly higher fat content than the guys. So, yeah, I mean, we can read whatever we like. I think that freediving itself as a sport has evolved. I would like to see it evolve even further. In New Zealand, we're the first country, along with a friend of mine called Fran. She introduced a grade called recreational grade. There's only New Zealand and Australia run it, where people can compete for the first time. They don't need to have all the pros and cons. They can come along, cost them a couple of dollars, or if I run the comp in Auckland, it doesn't cost them anything, and they can actually try it. Okay. Now, what people don't understand, it's not like you in the local pool. When we start eight starts, if we're going to start at 8 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock, and then we have a countdown, okay? And it counts down to 8 o'clock, and then you've got 20 seconds to go. So you can't say, hang on, I'm not ready. Everybody has to go at the same time. Because if you don't start, you're disqualified.
Wow.
So, you know, and, yeah, no, it's – look, it's – I mean, I enjoy all sports. I'm a sports nut. But I think every sport has its place, and I think
– Well, it sounds like something different too if people have been put off sport because of what we're talking, you know, like I remember playing footy. It's all alpha male stuff, but it sounds like this one, free diving, offers that extra edge. So
we do tend to get, when we first started the club, and I founded the club in Auckland 2006 before I went overseas, we tended to have lots and lots of spear fishermen, okay, which was great, mainly males, generally alpha males, you know, like it's all about, you know, and I, you know, not getting at you, Rob Harrison, but they like to pose with dead fish, all right? So this is the big fish. My son's exactly identical. I can show you some photographs in a minute. But we've slowly moving away from that, where it's becoming more of the girls coming along. And they're coming along not because the partner's doing it. They're coming along to experiment in how they feel in diving. And that's something new to me, is that they're coming along to just enjoy the water, all right? Yeah. And it's, you know, it's what it is. Lots and lots of people. I mean, four I had at the pool this morning. One is a guy, I won't mention his name, but involved heavily in animation. He's got a separate company with Weta Workshops. It's not called Weta, and he is a high stress person. All right, comes along. What does he come along for? He comes to training with me. All right. Every Tuesday, every Thursday and Wednesday mornings, because it de-stresses it.
See, I love it. That's getting to the heart of what I think what I saw from the pool that day, even though my kids were like, Dad, what's wrong with those people? I said, nothing, mate. They know something we don't, well, you know? And so it's just...
Particularly with static, though, which is where you're lying face down in the water holding your breath right now. The club in Wellington's called the Lazy Seals because it looks like a seal lying on the water in a wetsuit, right? They're called the Lazy Seals. We're a bit more original. We're Auckland Freediving Club. And the company I started all this was actually called No Bubbles. All right, so then, you know, but it's, yeah. So it does. That can be, but people don't understand that to hold your breath for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, whatever, it certainly hurts towards the end, but the beginning part of it is very nice, okay? You're all nice and relaxed, your heart rate. If you put a heart rate monitor on, it will drop by about 30% over the first 2 minutes. So just tick, tick. So it's nice. It's really nice.
And you're monitoring that yourself too. You're feeling it? You're one with yourself? Yep,
that's exactly right. If the better with the one yourself, the better you get.
And that might be the key, that minute that we don't get with ourselves, you're forcing yourself in that moment, just preparing for it.
Letting go. You know, it's
important. It's important, man. It's blimmin' awesome stuff.
Unfortunately, we lost the world champion last year to a diving-related accident. She wasn't teaching. She was teaching, but not on a competition. And she, a lady called Natalia Molchanova, who I've known for many, many years, not that personally. I've seen her, but I always thought she was a gruff Russian lady until the last two world championships, and I just basically got she couldn't speak much English. And, of course, I go, blah, 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 and, of course, she didn't understand a word you're saying. And she drowned, unfortunately, in Italy last year, teaching some guys. And you've got to understand this lady held every world record, and she will be remembered forever.
Yeah.
Her son's still about, Alexei, who's also a world champion. But we, you know, like everybody in the world, we did a special thing where everybody at a certain time of the day all stopped and held their breath for a minute in honor of her. I mean, she's that type of lady. Aww. She, you know, so it was very special.
That's so sweet.
Well, again, take the pool away, probably not a bad tip, right?
Mm.
Lose someone, hold your breath for a wee while. And,
well, it was just it was a remembrance thing.
Okay? Yeah, I like it. And, I like it.
You know, something
to remember.
Yeah. Oh, we lost a very good, well, in fact, she was a good friend of mine, to cancer last year. And the whole, all the way around the world, everybody took a clip and we actually put it on YouTube. And, you know, but before that, she was aware that she was dying of liver disease. So she traveled for 2 years. I'm not quite sure how she managed it, and went all around the world to all the competitions, including here, stayed at my house. And the last thing, because I didn't know she had cancer, the last thing she said to me, which was really hard, "I won't see you again, I'm dying."
Gosh.
All right. Not because she wanted to start on me, but she just wanted to say goodbye.
Yeah.
A lady called Kat Charnley, little Australian lady. She's come with the old fella. Because she'd give me jip, you see.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're a really caring community, very small community. I mean, compared to your rugbys and your rugby leagues and that sort of thing, but it's still a community that has a great deal of backbone and spine.
Love it. If people are listening, Johnny, and they want to be part of this, they want to at least have a look. Yeah. Is there places you can direct them online to find out?
I would suggest the club I belong to is Auckland Freediving Club. We have a Facebook page, which if you post on that and request whatever, or we also have a club website, which is Auckland Freediving Club. I think it's .co.nz.
Yep.
Sorry, I don't know. Or if you look up me on Facebook, it's under John Wright. I will certainly come back and point you in the right direction.
Coral, load up Johnny's Wikipedia page. Because it said something really random in it, but it was great.
I didn't write it.
No, you can't. That's the thing I learned.
Somebody's gone in there, John.
Yeah, tell
Bundy,
me about it.
Bundy, did you do it?
Wasn't me, buddy.
Johnny, everything kind of wraps up, and it always makes sense to me once we have these conversations. So I really appreciate your time. One question we asked each guest, and everyone takes it their own way, but it's an attempt to just communicate, to be honest, to try and work out that there's something else going on. I'm convinced I don't know what's going on. These help me work through that. So if we look at kind of the meaning of everything, the meaning of life, what's your take on it, mate? And it doesn't have to be heavy and deep, but it's over to you.
Well, you probably asked me the best time. I went to a funeral today of another friend, okay, who was more of an acquaintance, lived down the road, a totally non-religious ceremony, which is, you know, becoming more common. But I think the biggest thing that I find in what I do is that I feel at peace doing it. I can't give you it in figures, but ultimately, for me, freediving is an escape from reality at times, but it's also a really good leveler. The fact is that it is real. Yeah. It is something that you can aspire to. And it's not like, it's not a team sport. So my rugby league background is about being a team sport. This is about being a player to yourself, really, and being honest. It doesn't matter what you do. But, you know, I'm not into spirituality as such. I think spirituality is created by your own awareness of what's going on around you. I'm very, very lucky that I've got a wonderful wife, although she probably doesn't think so at times. I've got a wonderful family, and I think all of those things go into making you happy.
Perfect, mate. I love it. I love this idea that maybe life is sometimes a team sport. Maybe it's sometimes a solo thing. Maybe we've got to balance those two, which you've done, which you seem like a happy bugger. What is Johnny's Wikipedia?
I don't know. Is it Rugby League who represented country in 1975 World Cup?
Yep.
Is that you?
Yes.
And then this is one real random bit. What is it?
1973, right toward New South Wales and Auckland under 23 side?
Yeah.
That's you? He also loves Maynard wine gums and red wine.
Oh, this is my daughter. If it's beside bourbon, the favourite thing in my life, every birthday, every Christmas, I get Maynard's wine gums. You know what they are? They are English wine gums. They are the bees. Not your Chinese wine gums. They are the originals.
Wikipedia, that was the most.
My daughter must have written that.
That was as far as I got with my research. John Wright, thanks, man. We appreciate it. We've only really scratched the surface with you. Love to catch up again sometime. But folks, get out there, find Johnny's page, go say hello. This might be what you're looking for. John, thanks, man.
Well, look, in closing, when you're not so busy, why don't I put you through an introduction to freediving?
Do we wear wetsuits?
You got to step up.
Well, do we wear wetsuits?
Come on.
Yeah, no, you'll be in the pool.
Enough with the talk.
What,
what about get a wetsuit? I don't want to go without a shirt on because I'm embarrassed.
I'll have a suit to fit you, I promise
Thanks,
you.
Mate.
I have a lot of suits. I have a sponsor. So I'm sure we've got one to fit you. But come along and try in the pool.
Love to. And I want to.
And perhaps we can follow that up.
Mate, that'd be great. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, friends. That wraps up this week. Thank you to everyone involved, Crawford, Mike, John, Paul Spain, and the crew from Podcasts New Zealand. This is just a great community of people we're building here. And thank you, you who are listening at home, on the car to work. I've got some feedback, people listening in Aussie, the Kiwis that are over there, truck drivers, everyone. This is perfect for me that we can spend this time just having a bit of a ponder about life. MyKiwiLife.com. If you could share that with a pal, that'd be awesome. You can email me to say hello, will.fleming@podcasts.nz. That's us, folks. We'll be back next week with Slavko, our dude who's an awesome filmmaker and got an amazing film coming up as well. So go check out Propaganda right now on YouTube. It's a free watch, and listen to next week's episode where he talks about how he met Michael Moore and how his film has kind of opened up so many opportunities that are inspiring for me, because I feel like if that can happen on this podcast, that'd be golden. Okay, folks, have a nice week. See you next week.
Whoa, this is my